When you think about it, it's really kind of astonishing that in less than a decade, Americans' ideas about what to eat and where to get food have changed dramatically. And at the forefront of the movement to turn the American diet green is writer Michael Pollan. His book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, helped spark a national conversation about the ethics and ecology of food choices. In his most recent book, In Defense of Food, he takes his argument one step further. Pollan told Steve Paulson that much of what's sold in America today as food isn't.
The modern supermarket has lately been taken over with all sorts of things that look like food, might even taste like food, but are really just edible food-like substances. You know, if you look at something like bread now, I mean, you can make bread with flour and water, a pinch of salt, a little bit of water. Now there are breads in the supermarket with 40 or 50 ingredients. Why is that? Well, they want it to last for a really long time. And to do that, you have to use the latest techniques of food science. And you also have to remove most of the nutrients from the food. Because the way you make something durable when it comes to food is to make it unappealing to microbes and bacteria and fungus. And, you know, I have a Twinkie on my shelf that I've had for 2 years.
In fact, one of your guidelines is if it doesn't rot, then you shouldn't eat it.
Yeah. This is a good rule of thumb because what is rotting? I mean, rotting is, you know, other creatures deciding that, ooh, this is tasty. I'm going to have some of this too. And the reason none of these organisms want my Twinkie is because it's not very nutritious. And that's been true, you know, since we first learned how to make white flour. I mean, the reason white flour lasts on the shelves for years is because the bacteria have no interest in it, and the rats have no interest in it. And we should pay attention to them. You know, they know something about nutrition.
But it seems like there's a big difference between a Twinkie. I mean, I have no idea what a Twinkie is made of. And
you should read the ingredients sometime. It's, it's really fascinating. It's actually meat. No, it does. It contains beef, oddly enough.
So vegetarians should not eat Twinkies.
It's okay, a very complex food.
Well, okay, there's the Twinkie on the one hand, and, you know, all these fabricated substances like that. And then there are the loaves of bread, on the other hand, or the pastas, which, yes, they may have a few extra ingredients that our grandmothers didn't have in their pasta, but are you really saying a lot of those things are also not food?
Yeah. I mean, low-carb pasta? Yeah. I mean, I was just looking at a label for low-carb pasta. Again, another food that could be made with one ingredient called wheat. Now it's got six or seven because they want to substitute the wheat with all sorts of polysaccharides and forms of fiber to kind of give it fill without giving you any kind of insulin reaction from a normal carbohydrate. So to me, we should call that imitation spaghetti, not spaghetti. I'm not saying it's, you know, poison. It's not going to kill you, but it's not going to do what pasta does.
Now, you are incredibly hard on nutritionists. In fact, you say nutrition science has nothing important to teach us. That's a rather sweeping denunciation.
Well, you know, nutrition scientists are doing important work, and sooner or later they will figure out food and figure out exactly what's going on in food and what's going on in our bodies when we eat food. But they haven't gotten there yet. It's an important science, and, you know, I think we should fund it and we should encourage it and we should watch it with great interest. But to my mind, it's kind of like where surgery was in 1650. You know, it's interesting and promising, but not yet ready for prime time. You don't want those people operating on you quite yet. That's where we are with nutrition science. So far, they really don't understand what's going on in the soul of a carrot. They have some ideas, they have some theories, but very often they're proven wrong. And there are nutritionists who will admit this to you, who will tell you, look, this is a very difficult science to do. How do you compare two foods? You know, there are no placebos when it comes to food. You can't give people fake steak, you know, next to real steak to see what the effect is.
Part of what nutritionists have tried to do is they've tried to break down foods into their component parts and into their nutrients. And so you have, you know, so much vitamin C or vitamin D or omega-3 fatty acids and, you know, get enough of those good things and manufacture a new kind of food that will give us all that we need.
That's the idea. But the interesting and weird thing is that foods turn out to be more than their nutrient parts. And that very often when we isolate these nutrients, which we've been doing for, 175 years, figuring out the key nutrient inside these foods, when you rip those nutrients from their food context, they suddenly don't behave in quite the same way. So, for example, we thought for a long time that beta-carotene, which is in a lot of vegetables, a lot of orange vegetables in particular, this helped protect against cancer, because we know these vegetables seem to help protect against cancer, so probably it was the beta-carotene. But as soon as you took that out of the food and put it in a supplement, it didn't work. In fact, in some cases, it increased the risk of cancer. So there was something else going on. The beta-carotene is perhaps working in relation to another plant substance, or maybe, there are 40 other carotenes that get much less attention. Maybe it's one of them or some combination. Or maybe a food is more than the sum of its nutrient parts. Maybe there are various synergies going on.
Do you say the real culprit here is the Western diet? Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, all this chatter about nutrients really obscures what I think is the elephant in the room. And one of the things we do know with some certainty about eating and health is that the Western diet, which is to say this diet of highly processed food, refined grain, lots of free sugars and added fat, lots of meat, and very little fresh fruit and vegetables and whole grain, that American fast food diet reliably causes chronic diseases. And that before that diet was widely adapted, the incidence of obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and a whole specific set of diet-related cancers were virtually unheard of. And as you watch populations eating traditional diets adapt that Western diet, we see them get these diseases like clockwork.
Okay, well, let's talk about how we should eat then. You have a few guidelines. One is don't eat anything your great-grandmother would not recognize as food.
Yeah, I'm basically trying with the kinds of rules of thumb that I offer in this book to help people escape the Western diet without actually having to leave civilization and join the Maasai or the Aborigines, which doesn't strike me as practical. So I come up with these kind of more cultural rather than scientific rules of thumb. And the example you cite is, it's kind of a mental test. Imagine you're in the supermarket, you're rolling down the aisle, and your great-grandmother is with you. And you pick up the Go-Gurt portable yogurt tubes. Does she recognize that as food? She probably doesn't even know how to get the stuff into her body from the tube. I mean, what is that exactly? Is it toothpaste? It doesn't look like food. And then she reads the label. And, she knows that yogurt is basically milk in a bacterial culture. But there are 10 or 15 different things that have nothing to do with milk or bacteria on that label. So I don't think she recognizes that as food. And I think the supermarket is full of things like that.
Do you tend to read labels when you go into a grocery store?
For laughs, mostly. I do. I mean, I do read labels, but...
I mean, does that determine whether you buy something or not?
Occasionally it will. I mean, one of my rules is, don't buy foods with more than 5 ingredients. Or don't buy foods with ingredients that you can't pronounce. Or don't buy foods whose ingredients include high fructose corn syrup. Not because high fructose corn syrup is necessarily a satanic nutrient, as a lot of people do, but because it's a real marker of a highly processed food. I mean, who do you know who cooks with high fructose corn syrup? So these are kind of all algorithms to help you sort out the food from the edible food-like substances. Another tip of mine that is a little bit counterintuitive is I also recommend that if you're concerned about your health, avoid foods that make health claims. And, if you think about it, the foods that carry health claims tend to be packaged foods because you need a package to put the health claim on. You also need a big marketing budget to get it out there and a science budget to do the research to satisfy the FDA. And these health claims are usually based on erroneous science or sketchy science. It's not hard to get a health claim on a food. And the real problem, I'm not saying that it's poison, but, the really healthy foods are the ones that are very quiet over in the produce section.
Now, it seems to me your basic philosophy is that we should eat, if possible, organic, locally grown foods, mainly plants, but some meat would fall into that category as well.
Yes.
And I have to say, I try to do that myself, but one thing you quickly notice is that this comes at a price. I mean, this food is typically much more expensive than what you get at the supermarket. And it does raise the question of elitism here, whether that is an inherent part of this philosophy of eating.
It's a very legitimate question. The fact is, to eat well in this country, to eat healthy food, costs more. And that's a shameful situation. You know, right now, the cheapest calories in the supermarket are the calories of added fat and added sugar that are in the middle sections. If you've got a dollar to spend on food and you don't have a lot of money and you're in the market for calories, you can get 1,250 calories in the processed food aisles. And if you go over to produce, you can only get 250 calories. This is the result of the agricultural policies we have in this country, though, which subsidize the growing of corn and soybeans, which are the building blocks of all the fast food. So we need to level the playing field. We have to make the healthy calories more competitive with the unhealthy calories. Food is very cheap in this country, and I would argue it's too cheap. I would also argue that it's not really as cheap as it looks, because when the food is cheap, you end up paying more in health care. And as we've watched the price of food fall in this country in real dollars, we're only spending about 9% of our annual income on food. That's down from 18% when I was a boy in 1960. In that same period, the amount we're spending on health care has soared from 5% to 16 or 17%. So you see, this money we're supposedly saving in food, we're spending on health care. And I would just, you know, I would much rather spend it on food than on dialysis.
There has been, of course, a lot of talk along the lines of what you've been saying here for the last, couple of decades at least. Do you see a real change in the way Americans are eating? I mean, can we talk about a revolution in how we eat in this country?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd use the word revolution quite yet, but there are a lot of changes afoot. I am really struck by the rise of local foods, the popularity of organic foods, the return of pasture-based meat production. There is an incredible movement going on around food in this country. And it's not something that the politicians have yet recognized, but it is happening. People are very worried about what they see, the public health crisis around food that we face. They're worried about their children. And there's a discontent with the food, too, that it's just, you know, not as good as it should be. So I'm very encouraged. This would have been the manifesto of a crackpot 40 years ago. I mean, to eat the way I'm talking about, you know, well-grown food from good soils, you'd have to go back to the land and grow it yourself. Now you can go to the farmer's market. Now you can join a CSA and subscribe to a farm and get a box of, you know, really good produce every week. So we live in very good times, too. We have options. We have choices. We're not stuck with the Western diet anymore.
Writer Michael Pollan is the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma and In Defense of Food. He spoke with Steve Paulson.